This is the No Dama podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by John Maglione, talent acquisition specialist at Worldwide Technology, joining me from St. Louis. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, John.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
To start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Well, I have been a recruiter in the IT industry for longer than I care to admit. Worked for software development companies and staffing companies both, so I've worked kind of on both sides of the fence, and it's been a very rewarding career. It's been a lot of fun to watch the industry grow, watch it evolve, and watch people grow with it as well.
What's your day-to-day kind of thing?
Day-to-day, I spend most of my day talking to people about different things we have going on and where their careers are and how we might be able to help them or benefit them and how they might benefit from taking a look at us. It's just a day of talking to people. It's actually fun.
If, let's say, you were to give a technical person who's looking for work advice on how to find a good recruiter, what would be your summary of saying that recruiter is good and that recruiter isn't?
Well, the main thing about working with recruiters is you have to find somebody you can trust. You know, just like any other industry, there's people that are good at what they do and people who might not be quite as good at what they do. So finding somebody that is professional, that treats you with respect, that you can actually have conversations with about what you do, how you do it, and they understand how to be able to help you improve that. I think those are some of the key traits that you would want to look for in a good recruiter to represent you.
For the rest of the podcast, we're going to talk about career development and management. This is something that you talk about at conferences in the area and around the country. But to start, what is career management? How would you define it?
Career management's a little more of a proactive approach, a little more participative approach than career development. Career development, implies some passivity. Things just happen, as opposed to career management, where I encourage people to make things happen, basically be a little more of a driver of what's going to happen as opposed to just letting it happen.
And how does one make things happen?
Well, there's a lot of different things that you have to pay attention to. You have to pay attention to the market influences as far as the IT sector, the industry that you're involved in. You have to pay attention to what's new, what's upcoming. You have to pay attention to where you are in your career. You have to take a realistic approach, looking at what you're doing and how you're doing it and how it's affecting what you're capable of doing in the future. And, there's your communication skills, the training that you undergo, just being careful to make sure that there's some direction to that instead of just willy-nilly, just letting it happen.
I'm sorry, in your presentation, you talk about being self-aware as an individual. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. As humans, we like to have our perspective, and just making sure that your perspective when you're looking at the mirror is realistic, making sure you understand how your behavior is affecting other people, the emotional intelligence aspect of what you do, and how your communication is affecting what you're accomplishing. A lot of ways delivery has a lot to do with how well people listen to you. So being aware of how you're presenting it and how it's being received has a big effect on what you might be capable of accomplishing.
If you were telling a person, here are some of the steps for managing your career, what would be the key ones to take?
Well, the key ones, there's a couple that are really important. One is making sure that the technologies that you're working with are going to be viable technologies in the future. I've seen people lose track of their careers by sticking with one one thing and kind of riding it till the end. Then when they get to the end, it's really difficult to come off of that and find something new to do. So making sure that where you're working and what you're doing gives you the opportunity to experiment with new stuff and be able to use newer technologies in the course of your workday so that you can improve your skills. Now, if you don't have that luxury, then you have to find a way to do that on your own. A lot of people find ways of doing that by, you know, doing side work, by working on charity camps, by going to conferences and learning from that, by going to user groups, but finding a way to help keep your knowledge moving forward so you don't get stuck and get behind the curve.
Yeah, I was going to say it can be very difficult in a company to encourage them or even to drive them to a new technology. But I have seen people give the examples of, you know, give camps, code camps, conferences, watch a Pluralsight course, read a book. But still, getting the difference between getting experience in a work environment where you've got, you know, a real world problem with a large scope as opposed to, let's say, doing a small thing, it often doesn't feel the same. Is there any way to get that the bigger, more complicated project under your belt if you want to present yourself as being capable of some technology you haven't worked with?
Well, you know, one of the things when you're paying attention to your career is, you know, where you're working and what you're doing. If you're not getting the opportunities that you need to advance yourself, if you look at the environment that you're currently in and it's not nurturing you to progress forward, it, you know, it may be time to look elsewhere to see if you can get that opportunity. Because under most circumstances, to get to the larger scoped opportunities like you're discussing, you're going to find that in a corporate environment, in a software development company, something like that. That's typically not something you're going to find in an independent project or a smaller project. So having an awareness of the company and that you're working at and what it's providing for you as far as making sure that your career progresses as long while you're helping them progress the company is a really crucial thing to pay attention to.
A lot of what you're talking about, though, would depend on you embracing change. And I know quite a lot of people in the industry, they don't like change. Any advice on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, when you look at human nature, that's probably one of the characteristics that we, most people really have a large amount of, is really being resistant to change. People get caught in what they're doing and it becomes routine, and routine becomes very comfortable. So understanding that change is not bad and understanding and embracing that change can help you move forward, you know, maintaining that mindset really, really helps make sure that you don't get complacent with what you're doing.
How far would you advocate a person take that idea of change? Because obviously changing a company isn't the biggest thing, but, you know, if you live in, let's say, a more remote part of the country or a smaller city, you may well have to uproot yourself and your family. Is that what you advocate for too?
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends. We have the fortune of working in an industry that has a lot of opportunity. Sometimes that's geographically defined. If you're in a smaller market and you really want to get into some things that are more progressive, if you have the capability, if you have the ability, sometimes relocating is part of that. You know, there's a several cities around the United States that are known as tech centers. And those cities tend to be growing pretty rapidly. I know we have an operation in Denver, and from what I understand from talking to people out there in Colorado, that Colorado is getting an influx of 10,000 people a month. That's unheard of. But those people are going out there for opportunity. A lot of them are. You know, there's a lot of technical opportunity going on in Denver.
Yeah, I think over the last number of years, I've seen some articles about the let's say the people leaving the likes of San Francisco, the Bay Area. They were moving initially to the, maybe Portland, Boston, and a few others, but it now seems a little bit more diverse. And I think today we're recording this on November 13th. Amazon announced the two cities that they're going to put their, I don't know, second and third headquarters or whatever they're calling it into.
Yeah, one was in New York, and I can't remember where the other one was.
I think outside DC. But
Yeah.
those kind of moves as well, it can be a challenge both for, let's say, a family, but also from a salary perspective. If someone moves to the likes of Boston, you know, rents are higher, property prices are higher. It's a balance between, I suppose, comfort and advancement, but the advancement isn't guaranteed, whereas the comfort might be. How do
Yeah.
you make a decision about that kind of thing?
Well, it's, I mean, you have to sit down, you have to weigh what your goals are and what you're trying to accomplish by what you're doing. If you've got a family to support, sometimes making a big move like that isn't always the most prudent thing to do. Sometimes, staying closer to your family and maybe working for a company that has really good benefits and doesn't pay quite as well might be a better move for you than if, you're young and maybe not attached and freewheeling and can move to either coast on a whim. So it just kind of depends on your situation.
But how would you even identify a role? Let's take a career path. A person graduates from college or enters the tech industry without a degree from a university, and they become a developer, and they want to, let's say, become a CTO down the road or something. Is that something that you can realistically plan? So, well, is that something you would tell a person to plan for, whether it's realistic or not? That they should say, okay, well, the next thing I need to be is this, and then the next thing is that, and so on and so on.
Well, it's good to have goals. Yeah, absolutely. If you're talking about your career, you want to sit down and decide what your goals are, what your aspirations are, and what you're willing to sacrifice to get there. Some roles would be harder to get to than others. So it just kind of depends. The industry has enough opportunity where I've seen people do that, where they don't graduate from a 4-year college, just get in, start programming, and move their way up, and eventually become top leaders in the company. That's not unheard of. That's a opportunity is a big part of that. But planning where you want to go from a positional perspective helps you understand what you need to do to get there. What kind of training you might need to get? What kind of things you can teach yourself. I mean, that's a lot of what we see is people teaching themselves skills these days, as opposed to having to have the formal training. That's a good skill to have if you can learn that.
Let's kind of maybe take this example, and if we can talk a little bit more about it. Let's say someone comes to you and they're a new developer, and let's say they will build that relationship of trust with you, and they'll stick with you for the next 20 or something years. And they say to you, "All right, John, I'm a junior developer. What's my next step? I want to go up." What would you say to them is the next step upward?
Well, if they're a junior developer, you gotta find an opportunity where you can progress your skills. And to progress your skills as a junior developer, it's not necessarily doing maintenance and enhancements. If you really want to move your skills up, you have to learn how to build things so that you can move up through the ranks and get the understanding of the larger systems. So that's one of the keys to somebody just getting started, is helping them understand there's a lot of jobs out there doing maintenance and enhancements, and you can do that for years and not really learn a whole lot about how to build software. So getting into a shop that's building things from the ground up is probably going to be a big target. That's where we would start with research and finding shops that are building things from the ground up. And typically, those are smaller shops and don't pay as well. So to start your career, you may not be signing the big contract right out of college. You may not be making quite as much, but you'll be getting better experience. So it's the trade-offs between what you're trying to accomplish and what you need are really great there to look at.
So then let's say you get that job and you advance your skills somewhat and you become the mid-level or the senior developer. What do you do then to move to whatever the next level is?
Well, it depends on if you want to stay technical or if you want to go managerial.
So let's stay technical on this one, and then maybe we'll come back to managerial.
Sure. Well, if you want to stay technical, then you need to, once again, I want to find a better term than advance your skills, but the concepts that you need to understand are larger concepts, more theoretical concepts once you get to that point. When you start understanding those and understanding the strategies behind building what you're building, that kind of puts you up to the next level. As opposed to just doing, then you start doing more of the planning and engineering of it.
What comes then? So let's say that architect is that point or whatever it happens to be that you're talking about, and you've gotten to that, and now you want to advance again. What do you do?
Well, you know, if you want to stay technical, then really the size and scope of what you're doing then becomes the issue. You can get to architect level at smaller companies doing smaller projects, but the enterprise architects, solution architects, people like that, who are looking at it as much from a strategic level as an engineering and theoretical engineering level, that would probably be the next step in that direction.
So you made a comment about management and the like. If you stick with the individual contributor, you know, the developer, the senior, the architect, the Uber architect, or whatever you want to call it, are you kind of limiting yourself as that individual contributor to some point that you won't ever become, let's say, the CTO? Because, well, obviously CTO is about managing people, about managing money, about managing the other C-level people.
There is some of that too. Yes, absolutely. Unless, in a lot of circumstances, as you get up into those upper levels, you know, some people go out and start their own businesses. That depends on how much risk you're willing to take. That's one of the things when you talk about embracing change and making a plan, starting your own business has a lot of draws that a lot of people like to do, but it's a little scary for some people. So it just depends on how much risk you're willing to undertake there.
If, let's say, we wind the person's career back a bit, they're out of college, they've got their first job, and now they want to advance, but they're technical, but they want to go down the managerial route. Let's say they're individual contributor, and next thing is team lead. How do you go from individual to that?
Well, your communication skills are the key there. Being able to communicate with other people on levels so that everybody understands and comprehends the message is probably the key skill to learn from that perspective. There's a lot of books out there written about communication and different ways to communicate, but having the ability to talk to people no matter what level they are and be able to have them be comfortable and understand what you're talking about is the key skill to go in that direction.
And then after team lead, what would be the next step? Is it something like an engineering manager, or is there some intermediary step?
Kind of depends. That one could branch off in a couple different directions. You know, you could get more into the engineering side. You could get more into the project management aspect of it. You could get more into the process part of it, product owner, agile coach, things of that nature. So there's a lot of different avenues that you potentially could take going in that direction.
If we pick the engineering one, what would you say then would be the next step?
In a smaller company, you might step into the CTO role. In a larger company, there could be many levels in between, as engineering managers, performance managers, work your way up to director, CTO. Every company's ladder is different based on what they're trying to accomplish and the scope and size of the company.
I imagine as well, then, the skills you have to pick up will be different. So in some companies, I imagine, again, some financial acumen would be important, because you could be managing a budget of $10 million or something. And the rest of the company might not necessarily care about your engineering prowess, but they might care about how well your ability is to pick people who will then manage the engineering.
Yeah, a lot of theory behind that is, good managers are always training their replacement. So learning how to mentor people is a key skill there as well.
You mentioned earlier, you said it in passing about professional certificates. I remember years ago, a lot of people were going out getting things like the Microsoft certified this or that, or the AWS certified this or that. What do you think about the value of those certificates?
Well, the genuine value of those certificates is when you have experience prior to getting the certificate, and the certificate is validating what you know and what you can do. Going and getting a certificate without having any experience to back it up in today's market really doesn't help you much. So being able to get some experience under your belt and then go show that, yes, I have a certain level of proficiency with this, is when it comes to certificates is key. Having a certificate with something you don't have any experience with probably isn't going to help you a whole lot.
So a comment a friend of mine made to me some years back, he had, one or two of the Microsoft certificates, but then he had to renew them every few years. And what he said to me, though, was, he was very experienced. He had, all these years, but then he'd go to a company and he'd say, "Oh, and I've got this Microsoft certificate in blah, 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 and this other one in something else." And they'd go, "Oh, you've only got two MCSEs. Oh, we've got another guy with six." And all of a sudden, it sounded like he would have been better to have zero rather than to have two.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything like that?
No, I don't see it in today's market as much as I have in the past. It seems to be, I don't want to say it's waning. It might just be my circumstance and what I'm dealing with, but I just don't see it as much as I used to, where it used to be, really important to have that certification. About the only ones I can think of anymore that are really, I see a lot, are the security ones. And I could see where that would be good to have a standardization, a good understanding of what good means.
And you think that's because the market for engineers right now is so good, there's such high demand, but then maybe in tougher times, the certificates might hold more value?
I think it might have a little bit more to do with how diverse the skills have gotten and how quickly they change. Obviously we still have Java and .NET around, and they've been around a long time, but it seems that most everything's being done in different flavors of JavaScript, and those flavors change every month. It's moving pretty quick.
Yeah, I guess in some senses there wouldn't be any point in trying to get a certificate in that, because the framework will be replaced in a year's time anyway.
By the time you get certified, it'll be old news.
And speaking of things like the market, I've been through obviously the financial the Great Recession, 2007-08, and so on, and I kind of missed the .com bust. I was between bachelor's degree and master's degree, and I was going back into university. But these things happen. What would you advise someone to do before they happen to prepare for, let's say, if, as is possible now, some sort of large market correction, which could lead to layoffs?
Well, it's a, you know, it just depends on how bad it was. You know, there's really hardly a way to foresee something like that happening. You know, in those circumstances, I've been through a couple of them, and there typically have been areas of the country that have either recovered quicker or didn't get affected as much. And I have seen people relocate for those reasons under those circumstances. You know, just I've seen people leave the industry and change industries and do something else for a while and try to find their way back in a year or two later as well. And I've seen that work as well. But, you know, with those being so unforeseen, it's hard to plan for those.
But with anything like layoffs or even a merger or something, it's very hard to plan for. But at the same time, we're trying to plan a career. How do you factor in the mergers, the layoffs, the acquisitions, the going out of business into a career plan?
Well, the career plan being more long term and those being more short term, you have to have some sort of, you know, backup plan for how you're going to make it through a time like that. You know, the fact that we work in an industry that's pretty lucrative, it helps to make sure to have yourself some security. That's one way of helping. Another is, you know, like I said, sometimes you may just have to change industries. You may have to do something else until you're capable of getting back to doing what you really would like to do.
Any general advice on how to balance your career plan versus, you know, life and enjoying things day to day or year to year?
You know, it's a pretty subjective decision to make. Everybody makes sacrifices. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish and what kind of time frame and what you're all just in on the professional side, but also on the personal side, what you're trying to accomplish and what kind of time frame. Everybody's situation is going to be different when it comes to that. So to give broad advice would be difficult without being able to talk to somebody and knowing what their goals and objectives are and what their situation is.
Any parting advice for us, John?
You know, when it comes to your career, it just the best things to do, keep your skills up, whether you learn from other people at work, whether you learn on your own, whether you learn from classes, however you do it, keep your skills up. Always keep a sense of what's going on in your local market, whatever local market you live in. Know which companies are growing. Know which companies are doing cool stuff. Know which companies are good companies that aren't doing well that you probably want to avoid. That way, if you ever do get into a situation where you have to make a change, you're better informed and you're better prepared to do it. If you're in a company that's helping you progress and is helping you keep your skills up to date and is helping you go in the direction you want to go, by all means, I mean, it's better to stay there. Just what's best for your own personal situation, you have to decide. Just make sure that there's a future to it, that you have some options.
Well, John Maglioni, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much for having me.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 79 with Josh Doody on salary negotiation, or episode 35 with John Sonmez on soft skills, or episode 28 with Eric Bloom about getting promoted and managing in IT. The opening music was Returned by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Forward Motion by Scott Grattan from the album Found and Lost.